Okay, guys. So this was a shiur I gave a few years ago in Toronto, which I think I meant to do it as in the Got It's Your Shiur last year because I wanted a chance to really hash it out. I had given it in sort of an abbreviated half-hour version. Then we did Toronto. One of the very nice things that they did at the Bayit, which is the shul that I worked at, was what they called a tikkun yom. But basically, because in Toronto, Shkia and Seis are so late, so...
How late is it?
What? So you can't... You don't get back from shul till after 10 o'clock at night on the first night of Shavuos. Like I'm telling you, the year I got married, so we still had Shavuos Shavar Brachos in Toronto. I was Ray Wasserman and I were commiserating because we got married on the same day, so like we both had the same like insanity of Shavuos Shavar Brachos, except I was in Toronto, so it was even later. So the second night of Shavar Brachos, you know, just because of when you get back from shul, Shavar Brachos ended at 1:30 in the morning. It was like, it was, and I stayed up all night the first night because I gave shiur at 2 in the morning. It was like, oh, whatever. But because of that, so like you can't, it's bakosha, you can get back to shul for the midnight shiur. So like staying up all night is like, it's ridiculous. It's like you bakosha get to shul at 12:30 at night, you know, and that's if you rushed your meal. You know, like from when you finish your meal, like you won't be, you know, if you had fleishiks, you will not be able to have cheesecake until after shachar. So it's like, you know, it's whatever. Like, so they do, but the flip side is the afternoon is endless. So they have this like several hour limud in the afternoon, like a series of shirim, which is really fun. So I'd given this then, and you know, when I had basically just started formulating my thoughts on it. So I want your opinion on it. So this is a shiur I called Better in Bavel. And I think it's also a good shiur to do. I think I planned to do it last year. I don't remember why I didn't. As the last shiur of the year also. But, you know, as at least some of you are going back, and those of you who aren't going back, much of it is because the balance of where it's easier to be between Israel and Chutz La'aretz has suddenly been shattered because the world is upside down.
Yeah, I'm kidding. If I was here, my mother would be drunk.
Oh, for
not being there the whole time.
But and as people really reassess, you know, like they you know, there's been an unprecedented number of unprecedented, but there's been a huge spike in the numbers of Aliyah applications, as always happens around things like this. It's apparently particularly striking right now because people reassess their values about where they want to be. And what I want to do is go through some agadatot and show you how some of the complexities of the relationship between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael and the communities they're in. And literally, if you go online, you will see that in the last few weeks, everyone is writing articles on this constantly because they're writing about how, you know, the relative values will have to shift as the financial stability of the different communities changes, and as the governmental power changes. And you know, I saw an article today that by Ronen Neuwirth that Israel should not have shut its borders to Jews. They should have encouraged them to come and make aliyah. And you still can. I was very confused by the article because you're allowed to make aliyah, but whether the storm here, as a lot of the support systems in Chutz La'aretz collapse. I mean, people are like rethinking this, and it's this very weird. We have a weird relationship, right? The communities in Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael really have weird relationship. It's this combination of like, well, sometimes we say, you know, sometimes people, you know, a lot of times people in Chutz La'aretz will be like, oh, Eretz Yisrael is holier, but like, you know, America is better for this reason. You know, there it's scary, here finances are better, whatever. And now the world has flipped, and now everyone is asking, like, us, oh, you have family in New York, are they okay? And like, the world is gone, right? Like, everything is very strange. But this is not new, and that's what I want to analyze with you, is I want to try to understand in Chazal how they view the complexity of these communities, and then maybe try to figure out what they're getting at, what they're doing, and see if we can maybe gain insight in this time when I think the global community is, global communities, is I keep getting this ad for some reason on Facebook, I don't know why, I don't even want to guess how the algorithms work here, but it's about someone, and I have not opened it yet, but it keeps saying like what American and Israeli Jews can do to end their cringy relationship, right? And it's basically, we don't owe each other anything. Like, we have a relationship, but like we have this weird thing, like, constantly. It's like, oh, American Jews, we feel guilty that we're there, and they're in Eretz Yisrael, so we should support them, and people in Eretz Yisrael are like, well, you know, we're the Holy Land, so like, we really should, like, you know, help. What?
What should we do?
I don't know. The Jew, like, if the Jewish agency has, like, offices all around the world, like, we send, like, you know, I don't know, we send... It's legitimate for one of your years in the army or in Shirut Leumi to go and teach in like some Hebrew day school in like South Carolina because that's apparently what the Israeli government is invested in. Like, right? Like, we have this very weird relationship in how we support each other. Like, we are, you know, who's helping who? We never know. We're always changing our mind. We constantly have an inferiority and superiority complex at the same time, right? Like, you know, it's like, right? Olim consistently either both feel inferior because they aren't like born here and they haven't integrated society, but superior because of all the things that we think are better that we brought from the culture in Chutz-Laaretz, right? Like, this is not new. But my claim in this year is that it's not just us who have this bizarre relationship, and I want to get some insight because I think that this was happening a bit in the time of Chazal as well. So let us go through the Gemara, okay?
You know, a year or two before this.
What?
Just a little before this whole thing started.
What?
Oh, that was, you know, a year or two before this whole thing started. A little bit.
Okay. So, let's go through the stories here, okay? This is basically, let's see, I don't think I have a single secondary source here. At the end, I have a little bit. But basically, this is all primary sources, so let's analyze it together, okay? So, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda Shchiva le Barta. So Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda's daughter died. Amru le Rabbanan le Ula. So the Rabbanan said to Ula, Kum nizil ninchame. Let's go and do nichom avelim. Let us... I have finished copies. I can print more. My phone's inside. I'm going to share for now, I guess.
Yeah.
So he says, can we... we should go do nichom avelim, right? We should console him. And Ula says very harshly, Amar Ula... Sorry, Amar le... My itli gabe nechamta di bavloi di gidufo. He says, "Ech, right. I have nothing to do with the nichum of Elim of those Babylonians. It is heresy, right? They, when they try to comfort people, it's just heretical. Ew. The Amri my efshar lemevad ha efshar lemevad avdi. Because what do they say? They have this like thing. What should we have done? Oh, woe to us. Implying that if there was something you could have done, you would have done it. Which means that they want to contradict what God did. Ugh. These kaifrim apikorsim from Bavel. Ugh. I'm not even going with the Babylonians to do nicham avelim. Okay? So here you have Ula. And Ula, in this story, right, what is his attitude towards Bavel? He's from Eretz Yisrael. What? Oh my God. It's like... Right, it's like he won't, I mean, just think about it. He won't go with them to do nichum avelim. Because he's like, when they think they're comforting people, they're spewing heresy. Like, that is the most, like, right? It is the, we are Eretz Yisrael people, and those people, like, we are the religious aristocracy, and they are plebeian, barbarian, like, you know, ignoramuses. They don't even realize... What?
The unwashed masses.
Yeah. That's Ula in Bava Kamma. Okay? Let's look at Ula in Bracha Lamed Chet Beis. The Gemara says, Rabotenu hayordin me'eretz Yisrael. The Gemara is going through a list of people who have nicknames. So like, Achirim is Rabbi Meir, things like that. So, Ula had a nickname also. And what was his name?
Ula sounds like a nickname.
His name is actually Ula. His nickname is Rabotenu Hayordin Meretz Israel. The rabbis who come from Israel to Bavel, who go down. Umanu Ula.
Why is it the rabbis and it's talking about just Ula?
So it's Manu Ula Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Right? It's Ula when he's quoting the statements of Rabbi Yochanan. That is Rabotenu Hayordin Meretz Israel. Okay? And then they give an example. Amar shlokot mevarachim al shahakol neibidvaro v'ani amar kol shkodo bar preadama sholko shahakol neibidvaro v'kol shkodo shkodo neibidvaro shalko bar preadama. The specific halacha was about brachot, about cooking. When is it hadama? When is it shahakol? Okay, fine. Then the Gemara says, in Chavi Reino Hayardim Eretz Yisrael, he actually had two nicknames. Our friend who comes from Eretz Yisrael, Umanu Ula Mishmeder Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have an interesting thing. In the first one, what do we know about Ula?
He hates both.
Oh my God, right? He can't even tolerate them. You learn the Gemara in Brachot, he lives in Eretz Yisrael and he frequents Babel so often that there are two separate nicknames that always mean Ula when he quotes Rabbi Yochanan. And that's how specific. He was there often enough quoting Rabbi Yochanan, often enough that he got two separate Talmudic nicknames. Which, yes, Rabotenu, our rabbis, is always Ula quoting Rabbi Yochanan every single time. Right? Twice, Rabotenu and Chavarenu. So, you know, there's this thing that if I just stopped here, I'll be honest, that I have this, I mean, maybe this is, you tell me, maybe this is a bit irreverent of me, but you just read these Gemaras and will support this. Ula seems to me to be the epitome of the person with the complex relationship with the... He is, I know this is irreverent, and I probably should not even say it, but I'll say it anyways. And Ula will forgive me, and God will forgive me, and hopefully everyone will forgive me for what I'm about to say. But I almost feel like Ula is like, I tended to meet these people sometimes. People who did shlichut, like many times, because they really loved being in Chutz Laretz, but they didn't admit it to themselves, so they'd spend their entire time on Shlichut telling everybody how you're bums because you live in Chutz Laretz and you have to make Aliyah. But in the meantime, and they justify doing Shlichut over and over again because they're going to convince people to make Aliyah, but really they're doing it because they really like being in Chutz Laretz, but they can't admit that to themselves, right? Like, they have this very weird, complex relationship where, like, literally they've done Shlichut like six times, right? And they've spent like a good percentage of their adult life teaching in Chutz Laretz, but like Bishita, they keep their accent as strong as possible, right? And like tell people about how much better it is in Israel. And like, you know, and it's this weird relationship because on the one hand, they really do believe it's better in Eretz Israel. And part of them is really trying to tell people, you know, you should make Aliyah. And part of the reason they go to Shlichut is because they really like the community in America or Canada or Australia and they really want to be there, right?
You could think that it's better than Eretz Israel and just like the community outside of Eretz Israel more.
Correct, but I'm saying, but it's this weird, complex relationship because, you know, we like to divide the world, right? You know, there are the people who just like, you know, we like to say it's very simple. Like, certain people are just diehard Zionists and they go to Eretz Yisrael and they think it's better and they just move and that's it, right? And even if they left certain things behind, zoo, right? And then there are people who either aren't at all, they don't care and they stay in Chutz Laretz, right? Or people who say, you know, I'd love to move to Israel, but I can't because X, Y, and Z. But the reality is it's much messier. That, like, there are people in Eretz Israel who, like, have this complex relationship with Chutz Laretz where they really do think it's better in Israel, but there are certain things they really like about Chutz Laretz and they admit it, they don't admit it, they come and on the one hand, they look up to it, oh my God, you have so much money, you have beautiful communities, you have communities in Eretz Israel, we don't have strong shul communities, and they come back and, like, they move to the yeshuvim that have, like, strong Anglo presence so that they'll live amongst, like, Anglo-style shuls in Israel, but they don't want too many Anglos because then they only speak English, right? It's like this very, you know... No, but, like, it's this funny thing that, like, even where I... Right? It's like the majority of my community in Efrat is not Olim. The majority are second generation people from Efrat. Because it's like, we're the children of Anglos, so we don't want to be amongst Americans, but we want an American-style shul. So like, you know, because we learned the value of like an American-style shul from our parents, but we grew up here. So like, right, there's this, and Ula seems to be, right, it's like the scholar in residence, or Shliach, who like spends, like keeps going back to Eretz Yisrael and screams at people about how they aren't making Aliyah, right? Like, it's, you know, again, I know this is irreverent, but at some level, right, you see a complexity, right? And if you see the next one is like, look at the next Gemara, okay? And this is like, incredible. This is Gemara in Tainan. Ula ikla lebavel. Ula once went to Bavel, as he was wont to do, as we know. Chaza porchot. He saw clouds that were flying overhead. Amar luhu pinu mane. Dahasha adi midra. And he said to everyone, look, put away your kelim, put away your strollers, your outdoor furniture, because it's about to rain. Lasov loati midra. The rain didn't come. Amar, he goes and he yells at the clouds. And he says, Ki hechi de mishakri bavloi, just like the Babylonians are a bunch of liars, hachi mishakri mitrayu, their rain also lies. Right? Like, it's almost comical, right? He's like angry at the weather, right? And Ula, another story, Ula ikla bavel, chaze maleitzana de tamre bezuzan. Now, this story is incredible, okay? And this, I think, captures the complexity that Chazal are trying to get at. And, you know, again, it's all Ula. I think Ula is a good way of getting into this. Ula once, another time, came to Bavel. And he went to buy dates, honey dates. And he bought them a full basket for a dinar, which was really cheap. Right? Mali tzani d'tamri b'zuza. And he said, Omar, mali tzani d'dufsha b'zuza u'bavloi lo'oski b'oraita. This mifunak food, right? This like really expensive luxury item is dirt cheap. And they don't learn Torah. Right? Like, you hear this sometimes. Right? People are like, oh, it's so hard financially in Israel. In America, they make salaries, you know, five times what we're doing, and why aren't they, you know, right? He indulges, right? What happens? What happens if you have too many dates? Yes. Bidyuk. Belilia, the Gemara is very adin here, it's very, very... Belai, let's see, Aru. At night, it caused him some pain, some discomfort. He woke up the next morning and said, Amar, molets on a disakina bezuza ubavloi askoi baraita. These basket full of knives is so cheap, and people manage to learn anything? Right? Now, this story is, I think, beautiful, because this story, right, again, is all Ula. But think about it, this is like a sort of comical mashal of how so many people, so many Israelis I know, think about America. Right? What do? They say, oh, Americans are so lucky. If I lived in America and my salary was, you know, a quarter, you know, whatever, it was a $200,000 or whatever they think Americans are making, $250,000, right? Oh, I'd have so much time for family. I'd be able to learn more. And here, you know, I'm struggling. What?
A lot of them
move
to America.
And make Yerida. Then what happens when they get to Chutz Laaretz? Not all of them. Some of them will say, wait a second. They make $200,000, but then they give, you know, by the time they finish taxes and let's just talk about from Jews for a second, and they have four kids and they pay $100,000 to tuition, and they have to pay health care because it's not socialized, and then they're like, oh my God, how do people in Chutz Laaretz make ends meet, right? Because... What?
Yeah.
Okay, in Canada it's a little bit different also, but I understand. But in first of all, in Canada, tuition's not as expensive, and they do have healthcare, which is why there's a lot of Canadians who move to Canada, because it is more similar in that sense. Well, Israelis who married to move to Canada. But of course, but then they get to Toronto, and they're like, oh, real estate is so cheap in, you know, in Chutz Laaretz. And they get to Toronto, and they're like, no, there are places if you want to move to, like...
The middle of nowhere.
Yeah, Toronto is like, a square foot is like, you know...
Okay, that's expensive, but it's...
You have no idea. Like, Toronto is insane. Like,
Texas,
I...
Tennessee.
It's crazy.
Dallas.
What?
Texas.
You can... Yeah, sure, but like... I mean, it's always the funniest thing, because they'll move to... They'll be like, I moved there for the Parnassa, and then suddenly it's like, oh, right, but... You know, a... 30, 40-year-old co-op apartment is, and these are actual numbers that I know from like this year, in the middle of everything, in Toronto, is $600,000, plus $1,000 a month co-op fees, even if you own. Right, like,
Canadian dollars.
What?
Canadian dollars.
Yeah, so it's like 15 cents. I get it. Okay, that's another point. But, but, what?
More in Israel, July.
Yeah, I'm saying, if you go to Tel Aviv is more dollar for dollar. But I think this Gemara, right, but this Gemara captures it very well. Right, that Ula himself on the exact same food, right? One day he says, oh my God, and Chutzars, they're so rich, why aren't they frum enough? Right? Meaning, you know, people who would say, look, in America they make 2.5 times what I do, I work 50 hours a week, right? If I was in Chutz Laaretz, I should just work, you know, part-time, make the same money, and I'd have so much time to do, I'd have free time, I'd have Sundays. Oh, I could spend time with my kids, right? And then, right, they get there, and suddenly they realize, wait, you mean you manage to work and go to shul and learn some Torah, even though you're paying tuition? Right, like, this is literally the conversation, right? Right, this is like the conversation I have with Israelis. It's like, oh, it's so much easier in Chutz Laaretz, and they're like, oh, well, maybe it's actually harder in Chutz Laaretz, maybe I'm happier here, right? And sometimes it's, and I think the Gemara is actively like telling you Ula's complex biographical story with Bavel, because this is not just a relationship that Ula has, right? This is what, right? If you notice, so far I haven't yet showed you, it hasn't been a survey of Chazal. This is just Ula, right? And, you know, again, it might be a little bit irreverent, but I sort of see, like, the Ula personality who is always visiting Chutz Laaretz, right? But every time he's in Chutz Laaretz, sometimes he just insults the culture there, and sometimes he, like, goes in back and forth, and, like, within a 24-hour period, he can be like, you know,
How horrible are they?
It's so easy there, and they're not good enough. And the next day, they'll be like, oh, there are challenges I didn't process. Right? And again, it does it with a little bit of humor, right? Maybe crude humor, as things would go, yes. But it does capture, I think, a sentiment. And I think the Gemara is trying to do that for you, is to recognize that these relationships are often, if not always, complex in these ways. That there are things which seem easier, which are not. Things that seem harder, that are not. Right? Hidden problems in both places, right? And there's something Moshech. And then, right, it's this complexity.
I actually kind of feel like this source of tangents, because these two stories together, you see Ula going to Babel and, like, realizing things don't work the same in Babel, and then instead of adjusting and acoustically, he just yells at the clouds and tries to continue doing the same thing.
Correct. And then,
he realizes when it actually hit, it kind of like hits him in the second story.
Yeah, and now, well, and we're not even done with Ula, right? We're just going to trace Ula for a little bit. So look at number 4. This is a Gemara in Pesachim. Gemara says, Ula Amar, Kedei Sheyochlu Timarim V'Yaskvatar. The Gemara is in a discussion of why did we go to Gala specifically in Bava. What's Ula's answer? So that they would be able to eat the dates and learn Torah. Ikla Luk Pumpadita, and he once went to Pumpadita, Krivulay Tornado Tamroi, and his host gave him a basket of these dates.
Very similar to the other stuff.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, here, Ula takes that same thing, and it's not just he eats them, but he actually
praises them.
What?
Praises them.
Well, think about it. This is what shows the complexity. This is the opposite of the previous story. Because what did he say? In the previous story, what did he say?
These dates are knives.
No, that's the second half of the previous story. The first half of the previous story was they have such luxury and they don't learn Torah, but what does he say in this statement?
So they can learn Torah.
No, God sent them to Babel to enable them to learn Torah. Right. Now, does that mean that, so how do you read the stories together? Was it that he said they should be learning Torah because luxuries are so cheap because everyone's so wealthy, and then got there so they weren't learning Torah and said, Gaval, they're giving up in this opportunity, and then he said, oh, you know what, there are hidden costs. Right? Or do you say, no, this is actually later. Right? That originally he said they're not learning Torah, and then he comes to appreciate the amount of Torah they actually are learning and says they were sent to Babel because it enabled. Wait, which order? We don't even know. Right? All we know is that Ula has this developing relationship where he's constantly thinking about what is it about that culture that enables, makes it harder to be an Oved Hashem, but he's thinking about this constantly. He is this Ben Eretz Yisrael who's constantly visiting and assessing what exactly is the spiritual nature of of Chutz Laaretz. And it's interesting that if you look in the Yerushalmi says that Omar b'Chanina Kodem Rav Hashanah Atchelo Galu Yisrael Babel Natu Tmarim b'Babel Ayidei Shiyu Luhutim Achar Metika. Shimargel Elashan Lotar Chanina And the Yerushalmi says that the Jews went to Babel 40 years before the actual destruction so that they would plant date palms, so when they would get there, they would get used to sweetness, which would get them in the mood for Torah. Right? You have the statement from Hanina that it's not just that like enables them to learn Torah.
It's
but something about the luxury of Eretz Yisrael, of Chutz La'aretz actually, enabled them to learn Torah. Right? Now, I don't know if he literally means sweetness, but there's a certain level which this is true, right? There are certain cultural things that I think the wealth of Chutz La'aretz enables Chutz La'aretz Jews to do better. Right?
Spend however much money it takes to get their kids to all the Israel for a year.
Or whatever, right? Or even so think about it, in Israel, if you think about which are the shuls that have the most active learning programs in their shuls. Like the little, right, the American Olim who brought their culture and, in many cases, wealth with them. Like places like Ohel Hari in Ranana, which has like Shirim round the clock, has an Eretz Chemda Kolel and like Matan associated with it, and there's like Mamish even learning programs like round the clock. Right? Because there is a certain level at which that type of, you know, culture enables Talmud Torah. It's also a right. It also can be a distraction, but it can also enable. And there's this. We're still not done with Gula. That was a side point of Rechanina. But look, the Gemara in Ketubot Kufiyat Aleph tells you the tragic end, and this is right. And watch how this story ends. And again, I don't think it's been Mikra, because remember, there's a. Let me explain what I'm about to say with contrast. Rav Pinchas of Kuritz, who is a Hasidish Rebbe, has a how do I say this nicely? A statement that it's obviously wrong. I'm just going to say it that way. Obviously wrong. And he says it is clear that the only words that ever came out of the mouths of the imahot and the avot and all that are the words that you find in Chumash. Now this is obviously wrong. Right? Yes. I don't know. This is not right. Rather, the only words that we find out from them are, or what? No, but why are they there? They're the ones that
matter.
They matter. The Torah is trying to paint a story. So we same in Shuv Chazal. We don't know everything Ula ever said in his life, but the picture that Chazal are clearly trying to paint of Ula is supposed to be educational, because there are plenty of things we don't know about Ula. What do we know about Ula?
That he would go from Eretz Yisrael to Babel.
Yes, and now how did his life end? So his life ended basically how you might expect it. Ula have ruggled have solik Eretz Yisrael. Ula would often go to Eretz Yisrael from time to time.
Wait,
right?
So
yes, so by this point,
Babylonian.
Correct. So it's not clear. Was he living in Eretz Yisrael and he came to Chutz La'aretz a lot? Was he living in Chutz La'aretz and he constantly went back to Eretz? Right, right. In this Gemara, it sounds like he lived at some point in his life, actually lived in Babel, right? So is it? It's unclear, right? Does that mean that he's right from this Gemara? You would say he is based in Babel, but like feels guilty about it and constantly goes to Eretz Yisrael to bring back their Torah, right? Or it could be that he moved at some point. I don't know, right? Unclear to me. Noch nashe b'chutz la'aretz, but he died in Chutz La'aretz. Okay? Atu Amar Ler Lazar Amar Ant Ula Al Adama Temeya Tamut. They told Ler Lazar and he said, woe to Ula, because you died in unclean land. Amru Lo Aronova. They said, but don't worry, he's coming to be buried in Eretz Yisrael after he's dead.
Wasn't he in
Chutz La'aretz? He died in Chutz La'aretz. Right? So he said, Gevalt. He died in so they said, but don't worry, they're going to bury him in Eretz Yisrael, in Harazesim. Right? Amar lahem, eino doma kalatam echan lakotatam micha. Too bad. Right? It is not as valuable to be buried in Eretz Yisrael as dying in Eretz Yisrael. Ahu gavra, tenav le yivam bechazoy, look at Ruchanina, amar lahem, amar lahem, amar lahem, amar lahem, amar lahem, amar lahem, Amr lai ach echiv nasa kutit umeid parach hamakom shahara go v'hu yivet acharav. And once the Gemara is criticizing people who go to Eretz Chutz La'aretz, it says that there was a certain man who had a yavama, right? Meaning her husband died childless. So the Yavama was living in Babel, and they asked him, should the woman go to from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraita of Yibam? And what did he say? What did Chanina say? No, the brother was a Rasha. God killed him for being in Chutz Laaretz, and you should send this woman to join, right, this person in this land of death, right? Forget it. So you just stop there, right? You would see, like, Ula's, you know, unfortunate end, right? Is he's this person who doesn't really have a good relationship. He has this bizarre relationship with Chutz Laaretz, and he dies in Chutz Laaretz. So then he thinks, well, he'll finish his life in Eretz Yisrael. And what do they say? Doesn't really help. You die in Chutz Laaretz, you're stuck.
Can we just go the other side? So this one is just good.
No, whatever. What happened? I don't know. Or tell him to come. Or tell him to come.
Her
brother-in-law lived in Chutz Laaretz.
Oh, okay.
And her brother, and her husband, I don't know, had gone and done business. I don't know. So if you just stop there, you would say the Gemara is very down on this Chutz Laaretz business, and it's saying, you know, Ula, whatever, you know, who went back and forth in whatever direction. Right, he got what he deserved at some level. Like, he died in Chutz Laaretz, and like, you can't really make that up, right? Like, if you believe what you say, stay where you are, right? That seems to be the undertone here, right? Is if you really have this complex relationship, but you really love Eretz Yisrael, and you're really down in Chutz Laaretz, so stay there. Stay in Eretz Yisrael. Don't, right? So if I stop right there, you would say that's the message. Except, what's the next line in the Gemara? So, just like it's also to leave Eretz Yisrael to Babel, it's also to go from Babel to other lands, right? Which already tells you, wait a second, Babel has a certain status, right? He says, even within areas, within Babel, and later on in the Gemara, it actually says that that according to some, it's the other way around. It's problematic to go from Babel to Eretz Yisrael because Yuchsin is actually purer in Babel, which I don't know why I cut off that line. But Yuchsin lineage, because when Ezra came up, who came with him? The dregs of society, which meant that the better part of society stayed in Babel. And the truth is that if you look in, you know, you find this in Yechezkel also, right? The people who were nigla early to Chutz Laaretz, right, in the first round of Galut, they thought that they were lost. And what does Hashem tell them through Yechezkel? No, the people in Eretz are all going to be killed, and you're going to be the ones who are going to revive Judaism in Babel. So this Gemara, right, as you continue, gets a little bit complex, because Babel, it's not so bad. It has a status, right? There are places, you know, there are distinctions. There's, you know, Chutz Laaretz in general, and there's New York. You know, there's a Chalais. There's Borough Park. Kedushas HaMakom, you know, whatever. Lakewood, you know.
So let's just take this entire Gemara into the picture. So the guy wasn't allowed to go to marry the woman because she was in Babel. The woman wasn't allowed to leave Babel to go to Israel because he was in Babel.
No, so this Gemara is saying she... No, the husband presumably could have come to Eretz Yisrael in this case. Right? You have Rabbi Huda's position that it might even be the other way. But what you do see is that the Gemara is playing with this, right? Is there's a certain level of a recognition of Babel, but on the other hand, now this like weird relationship is not just in Torah. It like, and again, I like Mamish share this in modern ears, right? Like, you know how like Americans and Israelis and Chutznikim in general and Israelis, it's not just like important things. We also like have this like weird sniping relationship with each other on every little thing, like what you eat, how you eat, how you talk. Are you, you know, oh, you use the finger thing, right? No, rega, rega. Oh, they're so rude, right? Like, you know, oh, you Americani, oh, mifunak, right? Like, you know, like we have this weird relationship with each other. This is not new. Look at the Gemara, right? Number 7. Masnisin Deloki Gabavloi, our Mishnah is not like the Babylonians. Domar Rabzer Bavloi Tipshai Dachli Lachma bin Lachma. Right? Rabzera even insults the people in Babel because of what they eat. Oh, they eat porridge with bread, idiots. Who would eat bread on bread? Oh, they don't know how to eat. Right? It's like, oh, you're not eating the hummus right. It's like this, you know.
That sounds like Ad Hominem.
What?
That sounds like Ad Hominem.
I know Hanami. Right? And then look at this Gemara in Yoma. Amru kamei de Rabbi Yirmiyah. Amar. Right, there's everyone in Rabbi Yirmiyah. Bavloi tipshoi mishum didayri ba'ayra dechashocham rishmaitz at the machashchen. This is at Hamanam. Oi, they quoted a halacha from Bavel to Rabbi Yirmiyah, and he said, "Ich, foolish Babylonians, they live in the land of darkness, so they say darkened things." Right, like, Amar le Ravat, hasik harlan tipshoi, v'hashik tipshoi de tipshoi, dekamagrin lehu v'lo gmire. And Rava is self-conscious, because if you continue in the sugya, he said, "Oh, until now they used to think that we were foolish, and now they'll call us the foolish of the foolish, because they'll say that we teach them and they don't even learn." Right? Meaning, it's not just the people in Chutzlar in Eretz Yisrael have this relationship, but the people in Bavel have this like weird inferiority complex going on, right? In Bavel, right? They've like internalized it. Right, which is, you know, you sort of see this also, right?
So
at this point,
Bavli then?
What?
If people in Bavli say they're worse, would they fall to Bavli?
It's a good question. Not for now. So.
Ask about this
book. What?
Ask about this book.
I mean, I can give shiur on it also, but not right now. Then I will never finish what I'm doing. Okay, let's try to get through some of these other stories. But again, I think, you know, this year is more for me, right, descriptive in the sense that Chazal are trying, let me get the point out now and then we'll read some more Gemara. But I think that the point here is why they weren't telling us this, right? And I think, as I said, I think Gemara is telling us this because this is like a complexity that's inherent in the existence of multiple centers of Jewish experience, some within and some without Eretz Yisrael, where often those that were in Chutz La'aretz were better off economically, economically, security-wise, and often in Torah because of that. But on the other hand, Jews, like as Jews, we inherently believe that Eretz Yisrael is important and that there's a superiority there. And this creates this complex relationship, and I think if nothing else, the Gemara is validating that. Right? Saying, like, this is not the first time it happened. Like, you know, if you just looked at Ula's personality alone, you would realize that that type of complex relationship existed in the time of Chazal. And I think that's important to try to manage it because this is what we need to do to get along when there are multiple centers of Jewish community. Right? Like, and look, we know how hard it is. Like, you know, this is not theoretical. I think you all know people who, like Israelis, who on the one hand will like go back and forth between saying, "Oh, Americans," and saying, "Oh, it's so great in America. It's so good for you. Oh, but... you know, but wait, what?
Yes, sir. What?
He's Israeli. I don't know what he's
saying. You know, so how is that a call out?
What?
That was unnecessary. Like, that might just go back to being
annoyed. And sometimes it's up, and it gets really, right, and you have, and sometimes the complexity is most among people who travel back and forth. Right, I always find it funny, like, you know, like my sister, like, ideological Zionist, you know, my sister has like no trouble. Like, you know, after college, she came here, did the army. Like, she doesn't care. She could stay here. She doesn't need to visit America. She doesn't care, right? My brother-in-law made Aliyah at 11, and he's like, sometimes I just need a break from Israelis, right? Like, I need to go to America. I need to have Dunkin' Donuts, right? Like, you know, and it's like this funny thing. Like, my sister, it's like I grew up there. I know what it's like. Like, if I don't go for a few years, big deal. Everyone should make Aliyah, right?
Awesome.
And my brother-in-law, who's been living here for like 25 years, is like, I mean, yeah, I love it here, but like, oh, Israelis, you know, why can I go to college? They don't have Dunkin' Donuts, you know, and it's like the silliest things, right? Right? But this is...
You don't have Dunkin' Donuts either.
Sorry.
Yeah. What do you have in Manchester?
Sadness, pain.
Yeah. When I went to Manchester, it was Dafka very nice. It was very nice. But so again, my theory, guys. So guys, my theory, and you can add to it because, like I said, this is for me a work in progress. My working theory is that Chazal shared this at one level because Yes, there is a theological significance to this, obviously. Right? Eretz Yisrael is important. But we went to Galut for a reason, and there are complexities there that, on the one hand, make it more challenging to be spiritually successful, on the other hand, enable it. Right? But I think that it's more experiential, that it's validating or describing the complexity of that relationship, because balancing the reality of multiple centers of Jewish life that each have advantages and disadvantages, both in terms of objective kedusha and in terms of just the very pragmatic facts on the ground, is very hard for us because, right, it's just hard to manage. Right, we know that these relationships are complicated, and Chazal are showing us this is not new, that people have this complexity, and that's part of what it means to have a global community, right? As on the one hand, to recognize the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael, to the other hand, recognize that there are certain things in Chutz La'aretz that are unique, that give them advantages that we can learn from and maybe even be jealous from in Eretz Yisrael. But on the other hand, right, there is something positive to having an inferiority, you know, I don't know if I want to say this, but positive to having an inferiority complex outside of Eretz Yisrael, if you believe that Eretz Yisrael is where Jews should be, right? You know, he doesn't say that Rava picked up and made Aliyah. He just said that, like, Rava had this relationship where he's like, oh, now the people in Eretz Yisrael are going to think. And that's sort of inherent, right? So those are my, you know, sort of thoughts, is that Chazal are doing this on purpose to describe the complexity of these. You know, that's why I call this year Better and Bavel question mark, right? Where
it's not necessarily.
Meaning, the Gemara is trying to tell you that these issues are grave, right? And then anybody who tells you it's obvious everyone should be in Eretz Yisrael, there's no benefit to Chutz La'aretz, there's nothing good going on in Chutz La'aretz, right? It's not true. And it's also wrong for people in Chutz La'aretz to say, well, Eretz Yisrael is very nice, but like, here I have such a good parnassah, so I can send my kids to the schools I want, and I can build the shul that I want. If I was in Eretz Yisrael, I'd be struggling. Because, on the one hand, you know, legitimate question, who's better, right? The person who stays in Chutz La'aretz and is a mechanech nagid, or a person who would have been a mechanech in Chutz La'aretz becomes Eretz Yisrael and, you know, becomes a, whatever, an electrician, I don't know, right? Who's better? I think the answer is not obvious, right? Meaning, those are trade-offs that you might want to make, right? You might say that your most important thing is to be involved in Avodas HaKodesh, or you might say that no, right? Living a normal life in Eretz Yisrael, even if that means I'm not needed as a mechanech, right? Again, these types of questions are complex. They're not a right answer.
What would be the benefit of just living in Israel?
Besides, like, this mitzvah d'oraisa.
Right.
I mean, everyone thinks that it's important halachically. What you call it, right? Do you call it a mitzvah? Do you call it a, right?
Like, if you don't think it's a mitzvah, what is it?
Like, I don't know. Meaning, the Rambam who doesn't mona as a mitzvah, right? Talks about how anyone, right? The Rambam who doesn't count a mitzvah says anyone who lives in Chutz La'aretz is if he doesn't have a god.
Right.
So what value is that? So again, that's where he's. What do you mean? He writes in some of his Shulchan, "I am the Rosh and Maimon who violates, you know, whatever was three Shulchan every day." It's a complexity, right?
If it's not a
beloved
thing, what's the benefit?
Again, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, where I, in this sense, am not. You know, if you remember, I got into a fight with this with Ellie last year, right? Where I'm not reductionist in this way. Like, I don't see a contradiction between saying it's not a formal mitzvah, but it's obviously the Ratzon HaTorah or something, right?
I'm saying, what specifically is the value? I'm saying
there is... No, I'm saying, like, I don't know if you need to formalize it. Meaning, for the Rambam, he doesn't think a contradiction between there not being a formal mitzvah, but it obviously being so definitional to being a Jew.
No, that is... I'm not saying halacha. Forget halacha. There's no halacha. I agree.
What?
I agree. It doesn't have to have a formal halacha. Say what is so important.
So
there's like a specific person.
Good. So you have different shitos, right? You could take the very reductionist approach, right? Which is there are mitzvot you can mekayim in Eretz Yisrael that you can't in Chutz La'aretz, right? Then you can know that according to Chazal, it's probably more than that, right? That even the mitzvot, the regular mitzvot that you do in Chutz La'aretz, are not as valuable as they are in Eretz Yisrael. Why that's true metaphysically is hard to tell, right? You can also recognize that part of the, right, that the notion that Judaism is a religion is wrong in the Christian sense. It's not, just like Islam is not, right? It's not a private affair. It's by definition a national affair, and therefore living in the national homeland of the Jewish people is the place where you can manifest that national side of Judaism, because Judaism isn't a quote-unquote religion. It's not private.
So what
it matters, right?
If Israel was founded in Uganda instead, like,
it would, because it wouldn't have, right? And then you'd have to remember, right? Even according to Ramban, right? Right? Remember, the fact that you can only imbue Kedusha Aretz in the place where, right? Meaning, there's, as the Rishonim say, there's Shem Eretz Israel and Kedusha Eretz Israel, right? You can only have a mitzvah to be Kovish, even according to Ramban, and imbue Kedusha into that which already has Shem Eretz Israel, right? It has a pre-existing definition that God chose it. Now, what value is there to God chose it and thinks that's where the Jewish people should be? Again, do you say there's a formal mitzvah? Do you say that you can be Mekayim mitzvah there? Or you just say that, like, this is part of what the ultimate scheme of being a Jew looks like? Right? And therefore, obviously, there's a value. Call it what you want. Right? That's my tendency, right? Which is it true that according to some Rishonim there's a formal mitzvah? Yes. Is it? Look, you can say, well, there's no formal mitzvah, so what value is? But I'll give you a very simple idea, okay? And you do with this what you want. The halacha on the books, Nifzak, from the Gemara through Shulchan Aruch, is that if you have a couple who's married, and one of the members, right, one of the spouses says, I want to move to Eretz Yisrael, they can force their spouse halachically, bring them to Bezin and force them to move to Eretz Yisrael, even if it means leaving their big house and moving to a hovel in Eretz Yisrael. I don't think, I'm not going to say that's a good idea, Shalom Bayis wise, right? What? This is in the same sugya and Tzubos, right? But it's nifzak lahalacha, right? So you can tell me, but it's not a formal mitzvah. Great, but I can give you a formal halacha that derives from whatever meta value it is. I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, yeah, that's, I guess, I'm
right? And again, I give you several possibilities. All I know, this is one of those things you have to work backwards. There is a halachic nafkamina to whatever it is. If the only language you have to explain that is, it must be that the Ramban is right, right? Because you don't know what Ratzon HaTorah might mean, so then fine, that's a riot, the Ramban is right. If you don't, so then say, okay, I don't know what the value is, but I know there's a nafkamina. So there must be a value. I have to figure out what it is, but, you know, there's a nafkamina, so there must be lumdus behind the nafkamina, right? Right, the nafkamina is that you're allowed to force a spouse to move to Eretz Yisrael, even to a less comfortable lifestyle, right? Like kofin, right? You know, I don't know what to tell you, right? Like, there's a nafkamina lahalacha. There must be something there.
Yeah.
Again, does that mean it's a mitzvah? Does that mean there's a possibility of a kind of mitzvah? Or do you just think that it's just sort of definitional that the Jewish people exist as a national entity and the place that that happens in Eretz Yisrael, and there is an incompleteness to Judaism outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that has halachic weight, call it what you want. One of those is right. I don't know which one. I just know that there's a nafkamina, right? It's one of those where you have to work backwards, right? As I know the nafkamina. What the lumps behind the nafkamina is, we can dispute. Okay. But again, if we don't get through every one of the Gemara's, lo sofa olam, right? But I do think that, despite everything I just said, the fact that the same Gemara that can paskin that can tell you, can describe all these complexities, right? It's trying to tell you that it's still not a black and white issue. There are, right? There are legitimate things to say about living in Chutz La'aretz and its benefits and its difficulties, right? There is, right? The Gemara, I think, is trying. Remember, this is always what we talk about in Agadata, that especially Agadata that weighs in on like quasi halachic issues, right? It's trying to fill out the picture and tell you like these are the halachot, but there's layers of complexity that we need you to understand. Right? And the way we can do that is by telling you stories about people who faced the same complexities that you're going to. And again, at some level, the right question to ask is what Zev is asking, which is, well, give me the formal explanation. And at some level, the answer is, I can give you formal suggestions, but I know what the result is. Right? I know that at some level, there's a benefit to living in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, otherwise, you wouldn't be able to be kofet. Right? You just wouldn't. Right? Again, call it a value to live where there's more mitzvot, a value to live where there's more kedusha. I don't know what it is. Right? What?
The place where the
mission is. Yeah, well, call what you want, right? Whichever one speaks to you, I know the answer.
Right?
Lamaisa, what the reason is, I don't know. I've given you possibilities, I don't know which one is right. Okay, so let's try to get some more stories and complicated pictures. What time is it?
9:52.
Okay, so we'll get some more. And if we don't get everything, I've given you the translation to everything, okay? Fine. So maybe let's run through a little bit of English and see if we how we get here. Okay, so look at number 9. This is towards the end of Bracha, 63.
This is the way
you just go through the document. What is it? So good. Rabbi Safra said, Rabbi Abba would relate when Hanina, the son of Yeshua, his brother, went to the diaspora of Babylonia, he would intercalate years and establish months outside of Eretz Israel. Because Judaism in Eretz Israel has declined in the wake of the Kochor rebellion, he considered it necessary to cultivate the Jewish community in Babylonia as the center of the Jewish people. Right, so here this is a great story. Because what happened? Rabbi Ava, Rabbi Hanina went, he was a Talmud in Eretz Yisrael, and he went to Chutz Laaretz to strengthen it, and he was treating Babel as the center of Jewish life by doing Kiddush HaKodesh. Okay? What happened? The Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael got bothered. So what did they do? They sent two scholars after him, Rabbi Yossi ben Kefar and the grandson of Zechariah ben Kavutal. When Hanina saw them, he asked them, "Why'd you come?" They responded, "We came to learn Torah." Since he saw them standing in hands for the Sage of Eretz Yisrael coming to study Torah with him, right? So what happens? He said, "Oh, the Talmid Chacham from Eretz Yisrael are coming to learn with me in Babel." Ah! So what does he do? He bolsters their honor by saying, "These people are eminent scholars of our generation, and their father served in the temple." Okay? Later on, what happened? They start poskening, and every time he would say Asr, they would say Mutter. He would say Tameh, he would say Tahor, right? Every time. So skip down. He said to them, right? He got so annoyed at them that every time he said something, they said the opposite. He said they're worthless. And what did they say? Right? They said to him, "You've already built up our names and glorified us. You cannot now demolish." Meaning, you already wanted to build on the kavod of the Talmidei Eretz Yisrael coming to you to learn Torah. You can't now say we're worthless because we're disagreeing with you. He said to them, "Why is it when I rule something impure, you rule it pure? When I prohibit, you permit it." They said to him, "We do this because you intercalate the years and establish the months outside of Eretz Yisrael." And they said, "Because you're usurping the power of Eretz Yisrael. We've got to undermine you because you are..." Right, you're trying to take the status of the Sanhedrin and use it in Babel. He said to them, "Didn't Akiva ben Yosef also intercalate years and establish months outside of Israel?" He said, "There's precedent that the biggest Talmud Chacham of the generation did this." And they replied to him, "Leave the case of Akiva. As when he left, he did not leave behind everyone as great in Torah as he in Eretz Israel." So they said, "Look, that was exceptional because normally the Talmidim in Eretz Yisrael get precedence. But Rabbi Kiva was unique because there was no one as big a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. So in that time, Babel actually had the upper hand." So what did Hanina say to them? "I also didn't leave behind anyone as great as me in Eretz Yisrael." And what do they say? "You're right, but the kids you left behind have grown into goats with horns." Meaning, you're right, but you left Talmidim, and by this point, they've surpassed you. Right? So it's this complexity. Right, but he's saying, you used to be the biggest Talmud Chacham, but then you left for Babel. And in the meantime, the people you left in Eretz Yisrael became greater than you, right? And it's this complexity where they're acknowledging that there are times when Babel can be superior, right? But that's not the natural state. And therefore, right, even the Rebbe might lose his authority to his Talmidim because the natural state is that Eretz Yisrael should have the biggest Talmud Chacham. But it's not always true, right? The story wonderfully balances it, right? Wonderfully. And he says, in the meantime, they told you, we're going to put you in Cherem if you don't listen to us. Right? That's what we were told from the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. So, in the meantime, skipping down, everyone burst into tears. And they said, "We have no portion in the God of Israel," right? Meaning they realized, like, if they keep going with this, they are giving up on Eretz Israel, right? And they lose the chelek in God. You can't just turn Babel into the Iker. That doesn't work. And why? What's the pasuk? And then they said, "Why the Talmidim Chachamim in Eretz Israel? Why were they so invested in undermining Chutz Laaretz as the center of Torah? Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim." Because Torah has to come from Eretz Yisrael. Right? But it's this complexity. Because in the same Gemara that says, this is how it should be, it acknowledges sometimes it isn't. Right? It's an unnatural state. That doesn't mean it doesn't always happen. Right? It's saying, you're right. in the time of Rabbi Akiva, Ramode, Chutz Laaretz was better. But that's really not ideal. And therefore, once you leave, even your Talmidim will put you on Cherem, if that's what it takes to establish that Eretz Yisrael is the proper one. Right? It's perfectly capturing to this this complexity. Okay, what time is it? I think we're going to... What?
It's 9:56.
Okay, we still have a little bit of time. So look at the next Gemara. And you see this even more. Right? Abaye said that one of the inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael is superior to two of us in Bavel. And Rava said, one of us in Bavel, when he ascends to Eretz Yisrael, superior to two people born and raised in Eretz Yisrael. So this is the Gemara I'll end on. Because this is like the most Ole Gemara ever. Right? This is the complexity. What does Abaye say? Oh, an Israeli is better than two chutznikim. And what does Rava retort? But an Oleh is better than two Sabras. Right? And that's what he says. Right? This is a Gemara. Right? This is not like... Right? I'm telling you, this is Mamish and Gemara. This is not like I... What? I'm saying this is Mamish and Gemara. Right? Abaye says, oh, the pinnacle of like greatness is Israelis. And Rava says, no. Pinnacle of greatness is Olim. Right? Like, do you understand how it's capturing this complexity? Like, on the one hand, it's better to be in Eretz Yisrael. But on the other hand, people come from Chutz Laaretz and bring everything Chutz Laaretz has and bring it to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, what they can do. Right? That is like, right? This is like, you know, Ole 101, right? We have like this weird thing. On the one hand, we feel inferior because we weren't born here. We have weird accents. The other hand, we're like, but we were Moser Nefesh to come here and we bring the best of our community. like this is Mamish the Gemara. Okay, there's a few more stories that I gave you here, pretty famous ones. Hillel coming from Bavel to the Bnei Batera. But I would, again, you know, you can read those Gemaras, you know, and what, like I said, what I want you to think in these Gemaras is that I think the Gemara is trying to l'chatchila paint a picture for you of this very complicated relationship we have when there's two centers of Jewish people, Chutz Laaretz and Eretz Yisrael, recognizing each has its strengths and weaknesses, and that we constantly go back and forth between acknowledging our weaknesses and our strengths. Right? And it's that constant superiority and inferiority that Dafka drives the dynamic but often tense relationship between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz, which is, I think, inherent in... What? Yeah, but what the Gemara is doing is acknowledging this, right? And saying, yes, there is a certain natural state where Eretz Yisrael should be better. But Chutz Laaretz has certain advantages, and therefore sometimes it has the upper hand, and sometimes Dafka, the people who can bridge the two worlds, like Olim, right, have the upper hand, because then you have a little bit of both, right? And it's recognizing all of the layers that exist in this. Okay? I mean, like I said, as I think you end your year, and some of you going back permanently, some of you going back this summer, some of you aren't going back at all, right? To realize that, you know, Dafka, if nothing else, if you learn nothing else from me in a year or 2 years in your case, that nothing is ever black and white, and that the Gemara and Halakha always want you to see nuance and recognize levels of gray and embrace that and try to balance it, and not, when you're going back to Chutz Laaretz, it's very important to maintain that gray, just like you have in the Gemara. Not to say, you know, just everything in Chutz Laaretz is valueless, and also not to say, Eretz Yisrael has nothing to offer that Chutz Laaretz doesn't. Like, neither of those are true. Right? Eretz Yisrael is clearly unique, and there's clearly unique things to Chutz Laaretz, and we maintain a complicated relationship. And that's the way it's always been. That's the way it always, you know, needs to be at some level, and to maintain a healthy relationship is to acknowledge the advantages of the other community, the challenges of the other community, and to allow that creative tension to drive our respective and joint communities forward. And I think the Gemara is trying to paint that picture through these personalities. We started with Ula, who is sort of a microcosm of this in himself. But we've seen that it really is expanded. The Gemara constantly ponders this through its narratives. And I think, at least for me, that always gives me a little bit of perspective on trying to in my mind, sort of process the ways in which our communities interact and how those interactions change as the situations on the ground change. And like I said, you know, with the last few months, the balance of power in so many ways has shifted. that recognizing that even in the time of Chazal, these things were always dynamic, and that they found ways of recognizing that and responding to change, at least gives me a little bit of tools, Torah tools, to process it as things continue to shift. So, if nothing else, you know, Agadata isn't as black and white as Gemara, as halachic Gemara is, but I think it does give you the toolbox to deal with gray. So, shkoyach for a fun year of Agadata.